to the Haven't Happened podcast, the podcast of people working in the real world of IT. If it's just happened, work on a help desk, a network engineer, an IT consultant, a computer techie wants to know more about servers, or even if you want to get a job in the IT field, this podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Al.
Hi, I'm Andy.
And I'm Jerry.
And this is episode 52, and we're back after a bit of a break, but we're now back. Now, 52, atomic number of tellurium. Of course, 52, we have weeks in a year, because you hadn't realised that. But some years actually have 53 sometimes. If you ever look at a piano, proper piano, has 52 white notes on it. There are also 52 cards in a playing deck, in a pack of cards. In fact, have you ever played 52 card pickup? That's quite a good game. You should try it sometime.
I've only ever played it once, because the second time someone asked me to play, I refused.
Yeah, you only play it once, but remember it forever. If you want to if you want to dial Mexico, you can guess what the number is. And also, who can forget the B-52 Stratofortress? Or the band, the B-52, what were they called?
The B-52s. Yeah, right.
That classic song from the Flintstones.
Yeah, that's it. The Flintstones one, yeah. So that's all the information you ever need to know about the number 52. And the other things you need to know, we're about to tell you now. So what have you both been up to?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I think it's been 3 months, isn't it? It's like the 1st of April today to when we're recording this. I don't know when it's going out. But yeah, I've been manic with work. I think everyone's been manic with work. I think Jerry will tell you what he's been up to. But yeah, I've been working on quite some big projects, which has been sending me around the world and working on some ships, because you have to get it right, basically. So yeah, that's me. We can go into a bit more detail about that. What have you been up to, Andy?
I've been up to a lot. I've been trying to think. I've been trying to rack my brains of what I've been up to since the last time we've been on. And I've been struggling to try and remember things, actually. But one thing that's quite recent, I mean, this is an example of, I'm sure you all have this and people are listening have this, of examples where customers or companies or whoever is involved in it take things upon themselves to do without consulting with people like us. You know, they just kind of get on with it to begin with and then phone me up, tell me what they're doing. And then you have to turn around and say, well, hang on a minute, you know, there's more to, you can't just do that, there's more to it. And it is an example. It's one of my dental practices that I go to. Straight out of the blue, they phoned me up and told me that they were getting these, they were getting a new app, basically, from Exact, from the company that do that. And they were all going on to brand new tablets. So they had Samsung Galaxy tablets. So they said, we've bought 15 Samsung Galaxy tablets, and we need to put the this app on it so that dentists around the place can actually, you know, use it for whatever reason they're using it for. And as soon as he told me this, I was saying, right, well, hang on a minute. We have a slight problem because you haven't got wireless in every single room. Because, and I've known this for a fact, they've never needed it before. It's never been an issue because every computer in the room, in every room, has all been cabled, right? So they've always had a good internet signal everywhere, and signal back to the server. But the Wi-Fi has always been terrible. So, of course, they've gone out and bought 15 Samsung Galaxy tablets just to run this app and didn't think about the entire consequences of what else they need to do. So now we've got the situation of it's three or four surgeries that doesn't have any wireless in it whatsoever. And they've bought these tablets for the dentists in these surgeries to use. And they happen to be the head doctors, or dentists. Whatever they are, dentists, yeah. They happen to be the head dentists of the entire place, the most senior ones, and they can't even use the things. So, you know, it's an example of, I mean, you can't really help it apart from tell them, you know, if ever they come up with a new project that they want to do. I mean, it's up to them, you know, that's their own business decision whether they want to do these things, you know, but sometimes you need to know this before you even start. You know, if they'd have rang me up beforehand and said, we're going to put these tablets in, and I'd have said, well, don't forget, you've got problems with wireless in half of the rooms. And then in order to fix that, it's no problem to do it, but there's obviously more time, you know, be more cost, there'll be more things to do in order to put wireless in every room. So we're now in the position of, we're now in the position of doing that bit. I actually posted on the Facebook, on our Facebook page, there's a picture of a load of tablets. If you've probably seen it, you probably wondered why I posted that picture there. That's what I was doing at the time, actually. I was multitasking by setting all, I had all the tablets out on the desk in front of me, and I was setting them up, updating them, and installing this app all at the same time. Perfectly fine in that room because that's where the wireless signal was. So we've got them all set up, so they're all physically work, but they're not in the rest of the place. So once I told them about the wireless issue, they then took it upon themselves to go out and buy some Netgear wireless repeaters. No, like the home type that you stick in the wall, and said, oh, we've got some wireless repeaters. I'm like, well, hang on a minute. You know, as you know with those things, they can be great, can't they? They can do an all right job in certain circumstances. In other situations, they're absolutely rubbish. So in their situation, it's absolutely rubbish. So we've got we're trying for one. I reckon one will do it. Wireless access point. So we're going to plug that in on an Ethernet cable at the other end of the building with just a wireless access point. And then hopefully that'll cover that end of the building. But we are yet to do that. And also as well with the same company actually. I was quite deterred, I suppose, at the time because I'd found out that they'd got some other guy in to look at their computers for them. And I thought, and I asked one of the women on the reception desk, I said, who's he? And they said, oh, they're coming round, they're doing a checkup or something like that. And I thought, oh God, they've got somebody in to replace me or something. And then since found out that they wanted, I can't remember the exact figure, but it was quite a lot to do the work they wanted doing. And they also quoted them for backups and stuff like that, which we were already doing, so I don't understand that bit. And they come back with a quote with them that was like really quite expensive. So they've decided to sack him off. So
I must say, Andy, I've had a couple of these experiences sound quite familiar some of my clients. So I guess, you know, as a freelancer, that's always a possibility to they're always free to quote, you know, to go and find someone else and see if they can do it better, see if they're getting value for money, which they obviously are with you, you know. And so, I had this time where one of my clients said to me, it was to do with SSL certificates, and they went, oh, yeah, no, such and such is sorting out those SSL certificates, because they'd asked me about it. And obviously, you know, I can't, because I'm not, I have a day job. I mean, I'm still, you know, got my own company now, but it's same effective thing. I've got a day job,
yeah.
So I can't always do things during the day. And he said, oh, no, we've got someone else to do that, and can you let me know this information so I can pass it on? And I'm like, all right, so you're doing that. And, you know, I don't mind that. You know, obviously they're free to get whoever they want to work for them, but the important thing is the communication, them telling you that they've got someone else to do that, and then any changes that those people make to anything that they're expecting you to look after, they need to let you know that. Because if they've changed something and you don't know about it, then you're going to be in the dark about it and not going to be able to sort it out as easily.
That's it, yeah. When you know the system inside out, or you know the setup inside out, and then somebody changes something, and then something goes wrong, then you're in the dark again, aren't you?
Yeah. And the other thing that you mentioned was about them getting in new technology and expecting you to sort it out. I mean, one example of that was I got a new server for them. And it was to hold their database, because if you can split the database from the web server, that helps, because the database often takes all the resources on websites that use databases. So I did this for this company, and then they decided to use this server that I got them for building a completely, like a new test website of what they were going to do. And it was all done, it was kind of done without me knowing about it. And then they were like, all right, we need this for tomorrow. Can you set all this up? And I was like, yeah, I can set it up, but I can't do it by tomorrow. You know, there's just not enough time. And ended up costing them quite a bit because I charged by the hour. I was like, yeah, that's, you know, you asked me to sort this out. It took me this long. That's how long it takes. So, you know, if you give me a bit more warning, or, you know, maybe you discussed it, you know, say a week in advance, then, you know, I might have been able to work something out and do it a bit cheaper or whatever, or make some suggestions. But, you know, if it comes to you as like a done thing, then, you know, you just got to do what you can.
That's it. I mean, when they come at, because even on their side, because if they could think, oh, you know, we'll get this and we'll get that and we'll ask him to do it and it'll only take him an hour, you know, then that's the total cost they think is the equipment plus an hour for you, right? And then, but if they asked you to begin with before they'd even done it, you know, then you could have said, no, that's going to take a day to set up, right? And that's going to cost this much. And then they then can make a decision of whether they want to do it in the first place. Because they may think, well, by the time we do the stuff and then paying for a day, that's, you know, too expensive, whatever. They're assuming you can just do it in an hour, or just plug it in and it'll work or something like that. But I've had a few people like that. I'm sure everybody's had some stories about... you know, same people have phoned me up and said, oh, we've got new computers for this particular surgery. You know, can you come down and plug it in? Yeah. Now, did you get this? Right? Like, even like simple things. Last time, they got a load of new towers for each dentist surgery. I mean, I know this is little things, but they didn't consider them. They got a load of new towers. Plug them all in, and their existing keyboards that they had were PS2, and the towers, I think they were old Dell ones, were USB, right? So now they had a whole surgery full of computers, and none of the keyboards fit the thing, right? Because none of that was planned ahead at all. And then it was a case of, we've got no keyboards for any of the, and the mice as well. All the mice and everything were PS2, and they couldn't plug them in. They then had to do a rush job where they ran out to, I don't know where they ran out to,
PC World or whatever.
Yeah, and I think they ran out to Asda, right? And got some, I can't remember what make the cheap ones are in Asda, but you know, Asda value,
yeah,
keyboards, other value brands are available. But you know, it happens.
I mean, there's not a lot of differentiation with keyboards, but even at Asda, you're paying more for a keyboard than you could pay online. You know, sort of trade prices.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
I've actually seen some specific dental keyboards, which are USB, and they are completely flexible keyboards, and they're like membraned, and you can stick them under a tap and wash them, and you can spray them down with antibacterial stuff and all stuff like that.
When I used to work for dental people, we put them in all the places, because like obviously you can get all the germs, everything, get in between the keys and stuff.
Yeah.
And you can like put them in the dishwasher and stuff. They're really cool kind of thing. Yeah. And if you ever take one of those computers apart, what has been in a dental practice, it's quite disgusting what you can find inside of it, kind of like all the dust and stuff.
Teeth.
But like I said, like it's Mercury. People.
Sorry.
People go off and do their own thing. I mean, like I've been dealing with a company, who'd been overtaken by American company. Well, they've actually been taken over by like someone like a Hong Kong company, but the IT people in America and the UK people in the UK. And so they change something in America, which then breaks something in the UK. So they change it at night time, and then obviously come in the morning and then it's broken, and then we have to go in and fix it. So it's also, but they keep having to come into us because we know their system's inside or out. So
yeah.
And we can charge them more and more because they keep breaking things, and because obviously we've got a contract which says it's not a break fix contract, it's a managed service contract. So say if something does break, like a service or something, then we'll fix it, or run out of disk space, we'll fix it. But if someone actually breaks something, like by changing configuration, that's not covered by the break fix contract.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah, so how does the Wi-Fi get on? Are you getting good Wi-Fi coverage, or is it working quite well, kind of thing?
The Wi-Fi bit, right. Well, I've got the wireless access point. It's not installed and going yet. So the actual tablets are all set up.
Yeah.
And they do work at one end of the building. And I think they're kind of trialing it at the minute. You know, they're kind of testing it out, make sure it works and everything. I don't know exactly what the app's for. I really don't know, but I'll find out in due course or whatever. But it's something to do with the records or the, I don't know, database collection of some description.
So these apps, did they did you have to install it from an app store? Is it something you have to install locally or something? Or
yeah, so what we had to do is just get the Samsung tablet, Samsung Galaxy, set it up, connect it to the Wi-Fi, and then there was an app on the Google Play Store,
yeah,
which I think they made or one of their companies have made. Can't remember what it's called. It's to do with Exact anyway. Exact.
Okay.
And it's on the Google Play Store. I'll try and find it after, or while we're talking.
And is it a hosted application? Is it data hosted still? Is it still the data hosted locally kind of thing?
No, I think it's all hosted online.
All right, that's quite cool.
Yeah, because I was saying it's the first step in into holding all the data online, because the rest of the data that they have, you know, as when you used to use it, it's all local on one of the local machines.
Yeah.
And that's some of the questions we've had with backups and stuff. Is that, sorry?
And having hard drive nicked, right? As we discussed.
That's right,
in
the podcast. Yeah. It's the same one, yeah. You know, because if all this data was kept online, you know, in a cloud drive or whatever, then there's the backup, it's safe, it's off the premises. And blah blah blah, but the main stuff is still kept locally. But the information on this app is going to be hosted somewhere else. So
then all you've got to worry about is the NSA.
Yeah.
Or GCHQ, I should say, in this country.
It's quite interesting. I've been doing some stuff about Ariba Wi-Fi kind of thing. So as I was asking about the dental, thing. Because if they've just got a home router, which isn't like a business app but Wi-Fi, you're going to probably find that things, packets will get dropped, and like you don't get a fair amount of airtime. So like if you got like a decent iPhone 7 or whatever, which connects to Wi-Fi, and you've got a crappy other old iPhone, the iPhone 7 will get prioritized over the iPhone 7 because it's got so they're saying like these Reba Wi-Fi access points. Basically, they're like a controller. What controls them? I mean, we're looking at a site, well, this ship, what I'm doing, it's got like 300 access points on it, and they all control from one place. And if you put them so they're like they're overlapping each other, and it will basically automatically flip you from one thing to the other, depending which is closer. And it will also do things like it will also do quality of service, so give it the fair airtime so everyone's got the same. But you can also do it, so say if you've got like a CEO or something, he'll get, and you're on the same network, on the same Wi-Fi connection. Obviously, with Wi-Fi, it's a shared media, isn't it? Because anyone can kind of speak or whatever, can't they? Mm-hmm. Whenever. It's not like wired, where you can kind of define who can go and who can talk. With the Wi-Fi, you can basically say, with this Abreba service, you can say, yeah, this CEO is more important than this person. He gets more bandwidth, kind of thing.
I guess you can do that by MAC address, can't you? As long as you know the MAC address of the CEO's iPad or whatever, then...
Yeah, it's all done quite clever stuff, how it does it. So, yeah, so what have you been to then, Jerry?
Well, I've got a new day job, which is quite nice. I don't know if I mentioned I was... schlepping all the way up to Watford every day from Worthing, which is quite a commute to do every day. I think it's 80 miles. I looked on Google Maps. So I'm now working in Camden, which is much nicer, very much nicer. Sometimes it even takes me less than 2 hours to get to work, which is great. So, yeah, that's good. And the other thing about this job is it's less like hard work, I would say, because I mean, there's probably something to be said about on this podcast at some point about how you're given work at work, because at the last place, not only do I have this massive commute, but I had three different project managers giving me work, and there wasn't really any coordination about I've given Jerry this bit of work, it's going to take this long. It was just, Jerry, can you do this from one project manager, and then the same from two others. So, and then it was like, why haven't you done it yet? Well, I've been given all this other work. So anyway, I'm not there anymore. I'm not bitter at all. So
didn't you have a contract for like 6 months? And is it at the end of the 6 month you then give it up, or could you quit halfway through?
I had a 12-month contract, and I had a month's notice. I mean, it's just like a normal job. You've got a notice period, and I had a month's notice on this one.
Because I always thought, like, if you were in a contract, you like, had that contract for like 12 months or whatever, and then they couldn't kind of, if they basically left, you had to like pay it or whatever, and if they ever got rid of you, they had to pay for the 12 months kind of thing. So a bit like a mobile phone contract.
I think it's quite different. I mean, I think if you're a big company and then you get this contract and you've got multiple staff on site and so on, it's probably different. But in these kind of contracts, it's just the one person on site, i.e. me, and it's just a notice period like a normal job, really, normal permanent job. So yeah, I managed to get out of it, which is great. And so yeah, I'm now working in Camden for this. It's a web-based thing. They're using all this lovely shiny new technology, mainly Kubernetes, which is a way of orchestrating containers. I don't know, have we discussed that on the podcast before? Containers.
Yeah, I did quite a bit about it before, didn't I? Because I had to learn it for my job, kind of thing. So
was that Windows based containers?
No, it was both of them. Because remember, I did that demo, didn't I? It was showing you how to, I did a demo.
Oh yeah, of course. That's right. Yeah. Okay. So I'm a bit more kind of up to date with containers now. So what Kubernetes is a container scheduler. Now, you can sort of run up Docker on your laptop or whatever and see what you can do with it. But Kubernetes is kind of a way of deploying these containers in either a production environment or a test environment or whatever. And you basically give it the container and then it has a pool of nodes that the container can run on. And it will put these containers where the resources are available. And I think you can do other things like setting it to, if a container's using too many resources, shut it down on that node and move it to another node. And so you end up with the best use of resources. So the thing that we're using at the moment is called Kubernetes, which is Google's container scheduler. Something that's probably quite interesting about this is Google have apparently been using containers for the best part of 10-15 years in their data centers. So now they're kind of giving this to the rest of the world, since it seems like ever since Docker came out, people have been sort of jumping on it. It's quite interesting. I probably wouldn't want to talk about it too much on the podcast until I understand a bit more. But it's quite linked to the idea of immutable infrastructure. Because containers are immutable, once you've defined a container, you can't change it. If you want to change it, you can, but you make a new container. And so what you end up with is these kind of layers and layers of different changes that you've made, which make up this container. And the idea of immutable infrastructure is that once you put a system up online, on the web, on the internet, you can't change it. You don't change the configuration. If you want to change the configuration, you make a new system and put it up. And this all comes from AWS and having a disk image, if you like. That you give it an image of a disk, and you can build that using the sort of traditional, I say traditional, they've been around for 3 or 4 years. Configuration management tools like Ansible, Chef, Puppet. So you build these images using a tool like that, so you get a consistent image and something that you can, you know, consistently deploy. And then you deploy that image. If you need to change it, like I say, you build a new image. And what it means is you always get a consistent configuration on your server to do the serving that it needs to do. That's kind of the environment I'm working in now. The technology that I've been working on at the place in the last month or so, yeah, I've been there 1 month now, is Logstash. So what is Logstash? It's a log aggregation and filtering tool. So the way that you tell what's going on with your systems generally in Linux, Unix environment is by looking at the log files. So the best way of doing that is getting all your log files in one place and having the ability to look at them and see anything that's out of the ordinary, because log files are quite human readable. There's a lot of information there, but if you know what you're looking for, you can read them quite easily. So what Logstash does is filters these files. It takes an input and then filters it and then outputs it to somewhere. So the input can be just a log file or a log file sent from another machine. The filter takes the log file and it gets the information out of it that is relevant, like the time of the event, of the log event. the information in the log event, where the log came from, and then sort of tagging, you can tag that, and then the output is something like Elasticsearch, which is the sort of classic thing with Logstash. The whole stack is called ELK, which stands for Elasticsearch, Logstash, and Kibana. And Kibana is just like the GUI that where you can look at this information. You've got like a search bar and everything where you can search for things. So yeah, so that's what I've been working on, is kind of redoing the log configuration, because it apparently wasn't done particularly well by the previous guy. So
yeah, the log stash is quite good, because that's like a bit like the what's that thing which I set up before? That's like a free, like, isn't it online?
Paper Trail. Say?
Yes.
Paper Trail, was it?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like that as well. And also, I've actually set up one this one. I will be, not this week, next week, is one set up called Logarithm, which I think is the same sort of thing, but I just think it's a paid product. But it's just so that you can put all your logs in for your security devices, your Windows machines, your Linux machines. But the also good thing about it, obviously, it alerts you if it, obviously, it knows what when an error comes up.
Mm.
But the other good thing, if you've got multiple systems coming into one place, you might have a database issue and a web server issue. And if they match up, you can kind of like, look, I've got this one error happening at this exact time. And I've got, but also I've got an error happening at this place at exactly the same time. So you can kind of cross-reference the logs.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful. I mean, I don't know, do you use logs much on Windows systems?
Only when things go wrong.
Same for Linux, but it's just this kind of technology. It's part of a kind of DevOpsy kind of thing that Logstash seems to be kind of.
But it's also about security, isn't it? As well, is the security logs. Obviously, you can then go back in time if you can see someone's hacking or something, or someone gains access or whatever. Then it's got there. So that's episode 46. We talked about Docker kind of thing. So
we talked about it in the sense of, setting something up easily. I mean, and it's the same with the way we're using it. I mean, for the Logstash stuff, we've got a Logstash container that's kind of in a library somewhere. This is one of the things about Docker, is kind of you have to know where that container is coming from, and is it a kind of trusted source where it's coming from, and what, containers have security vulnerabilities which you have to address in some way. For instance, with the Logstash stuff, all I'm editing is the config file and the Docker file, so there's only those two bits that I have to worry about, and then I redeploy the container, which is just a command line, and then tell it to spin up, and then Kubernetes takes care of spinning up the container and putting it in a place where it will serve data, and also making sure other containers can talk to it, because it does. It's a kind of its own internal networking. So yeah, it's quite interesting.
What are you running? What are you running that on? Are you running it on physical boxes or something, or somewhere in the cloud? Somewhere.
It's AWS. And the OS that we're using for that is Core OS, which is a really kind of stripped down, designed for running Docker kind of thing. I think it has the Docker daemon installed, and also RKT, which is kind of Docker competitor. So it's kind of agnostic as to which container technology you use, but it's built for running containers.
Yeah, that Core OS stuff is quite cool, because it's quite light, isn't it, and stuff. So it's designed. So, cool. That sounds more stuff to come about. Yeah, because I mean, you can just. I'm guessing that bit of software that whatever it's called, the beginning with K. That basically just controls how many Dockers you need or whatever, and how you can put it up and down or whatever.
Yeah, I always think of it like Tetris. So it's like it fits the available containers into what it's got to fit the containers into.
Okay. So I'm guessing there the containers like running the web servers or whatever, and then you've got something in the back end doing a database or something like AWS is doing the data.
Well, you have a container that runs a Java instance, and like say that Java container needs say 16 gig of memory, then it will go and find a node that has 16 gig free and stick it on there. And because the start up and shutdown times are so short, they're like less than a second to shut the container down and bring it up again.
Yeah.
Then it's easy to do that. It's easy to move it around. But you have to build your application so that they will survive being constantly rebooted, and you know, they have to be able to talk to the database, for instance, in a certain way. And yeah, having the database as a separate thing. So AWS has this idea, I probably talked about it, of RDS, which is Relational Database Service. So the database is a kind of completely separate thing. It's looked after by AWS. You don't have to really worry about it. So that's kind of my new job. It's much more interesting than the last one. There's all this shiny new technology, and it's really good.
So I'm guessing it's also about the people who you work with as well, isn't it? I'm guessing it's the, I want to say the atmosphere. What do you call it?
At the last place, I was on a floor with loads of developers and as well. There's no other kind of systems or kind of DevOps people around me. And people just come up to me and again say, can you do this, can you do that? And I was just sort of stuck there on my own. And now I'm in a team of people. I feel like I'm not working hard enough almost now because it's so much easier, basically. It's easier. It's kind of, it's a lot to do. It's to do with the company. It's to do with the kind of where the company is. I mean, this is more of a kind of startup. The place, they only launched their website in November last year, I think. So it's very young, and you know, maybe they'll run out of money and so on. Maybe they're doing things right, maybe they're doing things wrong, but time will tell, I suppose.
Yeah, so the same sort of thing with me. I've been working on a project with a really nice PM, so project manager.
Yeah.
And he's the best guy I've worked with some rubbish PMs in Nepal from this company, and they're just like, I was doing a job. I was chasing them to get the work done kind of thing, rather than them, me. So this kind of thing I've been doing, I've been going around the world, well, flying. So that's why we haven't really been, I think everyone's just been busy doing their own thing and stuff, and kids' parties and that, you know how it is with having children and stuff. So I'm basically we're doing some upgrades on some ships, and they're sailing from place to place at the moment. And with the people who were doing the networking before, but they want us to get involved in the server side of things. So I've been drafted into the server thing. So I've been doing quite a bit of auditing remotely with these ships. Got like a satellite link, which is not the fastest link, but at least you can get on there and do stuff. So I'll put some scripts in the show notes. But basically, I hadn't had time to install an agent, but I've got like RDP access to these like servers. So another thing that I normally like to find out is like what the serial number is and what the model and make of the manufacturing system type is of the server. I think I mentioned it before, there's WMI command you can run on Windows, which is basically you can access it remotely if they've opened the firewall port and you set the permissions. But I think these are things like SolarWinds and most of the applications which gather this information uses. So, like, I was running some WMI commands. You bring a command prompt up, and you type the command in. It basically brings the BIOS and the serial number back for you. You can also get things like the serial number, and you can also pull things out quite cool. So, I wanted to know what applications were installed. So, the normal thing I want to know when I'm doing something is if we're migrating something, is what's installed on the server, like what applications installed of it. So, there's an WMI command you can run for that. What roles and features you installed it. So obviously, like on a Linux box, you don't normally get this, but on a Windows box, you can install roles like, is it a DNS server? Is it a DHCP server? So there's another command you can run using PowerShell to get that information. So I'll put that in the show notes. And
are you running these on like in a PowerShell on your system and it's talking to the other system?
Actually on the machine. So jump on the machine and PowerShell's installed in it.
So you have to RDP into the machine time, on the boat?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So I got all this information, and also I needed to work out what the CA type were. So the typical authentication, we'll probably talk about that before, where you have the public and the private key. And, you know, like if you got a thing, it's called 802.1x. So, like, you know, like if you, most Wi-Fi points you connect and you put a username and password in, or sorry, you put the key in, don't you, to basically connect to it. So you connect to the SSID and you put the key in and you can get good. But there's another thing called 802.1x, which is basically where you use certificates to connect to the Wi-Fi. So it's more secure, so you have to have a certificate to connect. I'll go a bit more feature of that into the in a little while. But yes, that's what I used. There's another command. I needed to find out where these CAs were, which basically gives a client certificate. So you can do like alter a moment. So obviously if you want to have this laptop have gain access to the Wi-Fi using the certificate authentication, it has to have a certificate. And there's a thing called Windows called, you know, like if you go and buy a certificate for your website, you have to basically generate a key and then it gets sent back. And then you have to, well, in Windows, you can, if you're running your internal CA, you can have an auto-enrollment agent. So when a PC comes along, it says, hi, I want a certificate. And it goes, yeah, prove who you are. And the way it proves it is by you give it, every PC, if I talked about this before, has a password where what the domain knows and the PC knows. And that basically just exchange that password. And then basically then gets given the key. So all done in the background. So that's quite interesting. So I've been on the boat. And basically, because obviously what we need to do, we need to basically do the research. Obviously, because we only get one chance to get it right, because it's basically going into dry dock for some work, and that's the only time we can take the computer system down. We have to get it right. So, like, I've been in Southampton the last week with some guys from the other part of the company, and it's really nice to actually speak to some other people on who know what they're talking about, if you know what I mean, and they really kind of happy about their job. And they do wireless as the other people. That's obviously, we're rolling out 300 access points. They know what they're talking about, kind of thing. So, but it did tell me about this little app, which is quite handy. I mean, in the past, I've used an app to see how bad the Wi-Fi is, kind of thing. You know, like if you've got like multiple Wi-Fi, it will fight against each other, doesn't it, kind of thing. So that's something like Wi-Fi Vera or something on the phone, and it basically just shows you what the Wi-Fi down, and it basically just shows you what Wi-Fi's points are about. Have you seen that before, kind of thing? So you can kind of see
I've seen them, yeah.
So there's another one here. So basically, the software we're using rolling out is Aruba Wi-Fi kit, and they provide a free app, and it's called Aruba something or other, Aruba Utilities. And basically, I'm just trying to find out my phone, Aruba Utility. And it basically, it kind of, it's a really good controller monitor. So if you have a look at this, it will basically just shows you all the Wi-Fi points, and it will basically, you can see it. Basically, it can tell you all the access points locally. You can't really focus on that, but and it basically. Yeah. So if you wander around a place, it will record. So if you get closer to one, it will show you that it's closer to it. Then you can walk away. It gets further away. So I was on this ship trying to find these access points. And this utility is really good. And it's free, and it will show you what access points are. It'll tell you what make it is. Could obviously looks at the MAC address. So it will survey it. So there's a little tip for you there. So but we only get a certain point at this on this, in this dry dock to replace the kit which we're doing. So we're doing a load of planning at the moment. So and the other thing about it is about is 802.1.x, is where you can basically the way of connecting your Wi-Fi, but using public keys or username and password. So basically, you could do it so that Windows and its directory username and password. So like, instead of not connecting using the key you've got, which everyone has, don't they? So you have one key, like you have at home, but when someone leaves, they're going to have that key, so you'd have to change all your key. But if you use username and password, obviously everyone connects to the Wi-Fi, they have to put their username and password in, and if they leave, you can just disable their password. So this 802.1.x for authentication is actually for wired and wireless. So actually looking at putting this into the switch as well. So if you plug your laptop into the switch, it will check if you've got a certificate or if you've got a username and password. And if it can't find you, it will like put you in like a dirty VLAN or something. So it will basically authenticate you. Does that make sense, kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So it says 802.1.x is a authentication consists of three components. The supplicant or the client is the device attempting to gain access to the network. You can configure the network to support 802.1.x authentication for wired users as well as wireless. The authenticator is a gatekeeper to the network and permits or denies access to the supplicant. So that's basically your Radius server. So that's the Radius we talked about this in the past is like where it lets you or not onto the network. So the basically is a database. So the authentication server provides a database of information required for authentication, and information informs the authenticator to deny or permit the access to the supplicant. So there's either two ways you can do it. So you either get PEEP, which is a protected EAP, which is an 802.1a1x authenticate method that uses server-side public key certificate to authenticate the client with the server. The PEEP authenticator creates an encrypted SSL tunnel between the TLS tunnel between the client and the authenticated server. So that basically means like when you go to a secure website, it gives you you basically exchange certificates, but then it means you can send username and passwords over it and people won't see it. Kind of thing. If not, you wouldn't have that, people could see passwords. Then you've got EAP TLS, which is basically the same thing, but using the public key again. So you'd have to have the public and private key to get onto the network. So, that was interesting but I'll really tell you more about that when I kind of get more into the thing. So I was going to ask you, Jerry, you might not know off the top of your head. PHP, I think I might. So I was talking to one of my pizza people at work, and he was trying to install WordPress, and I don't know what he was doing. But I didn't realise, but there's a PHP 7 out now, isn't it? And WordPress recommends that you run 7 if you look at the requirements for that. Have you come across that before? Andy? Jerry, yep. Jerry, you gone quiet?
We've lost Jerry, have we?
Has he muted himself?
I did. Yeah. Technical difficulties there, sorry. So PHP 7, yeah. You're looking to install it on CentOS 6. I recommend the Remy.
I just wondered.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the Remy RPM repository is what you need there, because he produces packages of, you know, the latest PHP and MySQL stuff.
I hadn't heard of that word. I don't know when PHP, because I'm running PHP 5.6, I think, is the up-to-date one, isn't it, kind of thing.
In the CentOS repositories, yeah. In the standard repositories, yeah. I think, yeah.
But so that's supported until it's got another 2 years, well... It's got another 2 years, apparently, according to editing. But I think he had an application which required 5.6.
Mm.
But when he tried to install WordPress, it was asking for 7. But I never had... I mean, I'm running WordPress on 5.6 at the moment. I never had it ask me for it till... if you know what I mean. If it to ask you it to install 7. I'm guessing if you install a new 7, it will... If you start it from scratch again, I'm guessing it would ask it. But I don't know if you could run 5.6 and 7 at the same time is what he was asking me. I don't know if you can have 5.6 and 5.6 and 7 on the same server.
I think you can. I think it's fiddly to do it on the same server. But then if you run Docker, you obviously can run two completely different PHPs on the same server.
So
that's probably the way I'd recommend to do it, because I don't know how you tell one to use PHP 7. I think you can do that in the Apache config, but PHP is a bit fiddly like that. I must say it's got a bit of a bad reputation amongst kind of the Linux admins. PHP.
Yeah, I didn't really understand. I think it's using is it PHP forum or something? And I think that requires 5.6. And you're trying to go to a WordPress server, and it wouldn't. I never had a problem, but I didn't want to get involved with it. I was just like saying, just Google it.
I'd say if he wants to do that, run Docker on that server or some VMs and do it like that. That's probably the easiest way. Then, I mean, it's good as a kind of if you want to do it and kind of work out how to do it, then great. But if you want to get it running, either spin up another server if it's a virtual server. Docker, I'd say.
Yes, I want to talk about hyperconverged, but I'm going to leave that to next week or whenever, because that's quite a lot. We've got some emails. One, just before I do that, two things. Have you played that Game of Life thing which they were talking about on the Security Now podcast? Have you looked into that?
I have. Yeah, I've heard of Game of Life before, and if you've ever watched Number File. Then they discuss it on there, and they actually have an interview with John Conway, I think he's at University of Nottingham, which is where they do all the videos for Numberphile. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. So if you put Conway's Game of Life into Google,
first thing it comes up.
Yeah, it comes up. Yeah, and you can sort of do a full screen or a full window version of it as well, which is quite cool. Yeah, I mean, they talk about our security now. Look at Google Cellular Automata, and it'll tell you everything you need to know.
So. Yeah, have a look at it. It's quite good. We won't explain it. It's quite... have a look at it kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing I'm looking at is REST APIs. Is that... I'd like to get into that at some point, because I'm guessing... Because I know that it's on digital Ocean, you can have an API where you can obviously generate and destroy VMs by the command line. I'm guessing that's what that is, kind of thing.
Well, I think I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think a REST API is where you can go to it via a web server. So something that you can type into your browser. So if you think of something like the BBC website, you have bbc.co.uk/something/something else, there is quite likely that that's a REST API. And what it's doing is, like, when you go to bbc.co.uk/news, for instance, that is talking to a whole something behind the web server, like Ruby on Rails or Java or whatever. And when it gets that request from /news, it's talking to something on the back end and it's returning all this stuff. But it tends to be the way that web applications talk to each other. And they normally talk JSON, the data format, JSON, JSON. And so generally, if you know of an API, and lots of companies kind of publish their APIs, they have public APIs. So GitHub is a good example, I'm trying to think of another one now. And they you could actually go and look up the APIs and you can get stuff out of the APIs. I mean, probably a fairly obscure example is my thing I use to monitor the energy coming off my solar panels. And it's like if you go to URL, a particular URL, you get a couple of numbers back in JSON format. And one of the numbers is the amount of energy coming from solar panels, and one of the numbers is the amount of energy being used by the house. So what you can then do is you can point something at that, and you can grab those numbers and put them in the database. So it's a way of that kind of applications talk to each other. API stands for Application Programming Interface. So it's a way of interfacing with another app. And a REST API is particularly used with web apps to kind of exchange information almost.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have things like a status endpoint on your API. So whereas if you go, so if you go to, say, api.company.com/ and it's usually an underscore and then status, and it will say success or failure. And if it says success, then your API is up and your application is running. And if it says failure, then it's not, and you can set up an alert for that. You can set up a monitoring alert for that. And generally, a lot of, well, places where I've worked, they have an API, and all the things talk to the API. So you have a central thing, a central whatever, which presents this API to the outside world. And so you can test them as success or failure. Or say you've got a mobile phone client that talks to the API, and it has a particular place to talk to the API, and then it gets a load of information back. So, yeah, that's basically REST APIs in a nutshell, I think. And they're really useful, so it's worth thinking about them. It's worth knowing about them, I'd say. So,
yeah, I think it's going to be more and more, definitely that JSON thing as well. I was listening to another podcast where you can obviously send stuff and receive stuff or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I've getting more and more, you know, knowledgeable about that as time goes on, but it's kind of something I only really learned about in the last year or so. So it's kind of still learning, really. But yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah. Another quick tip about JSON: if you're using Linux, there's a little utility called JQ, which basically, if you get a load of JSON information, you can pull bits out of it using this thing JQ. I won't go into it now, maybe, but I'll put something in the show notes and put a link in the show notes.
Cool. Okay. I think we had some emails, didn't we? We had an email in from Dave again, and it just saying about some of my spelling mistakes on the website, which I'm currently trying to get round to. I can't be good at everything, getting them up, but I think we had some from John Nice Guy, haven't we, Jerry, kind of thing? Do you want to go?
Yeah, he said, what was it? Here we go. He's involved with OddCamp, this year's OddCamp, 2017, which is, you may have heard from other podcasts, if you listen to those podcasts. It's being held at, I think it's Christchurch. I haven't got the thing up on my screen, but...
Yeah, it's Christchurch in
Christchurch College in Christchurch University in Canterbury, in the lovely county of Kent where I grew up. And that's in August. Trying to remember, 20th of August or something.
17th to 19th.
17th.
Or 19th to 20th.
19th.
Which I still need to know if I can get off, because I'm actually on call that weekend, so I need to kind of swap something out.
Swap it.
Yeah. But we also got, isn't there FOSS Talk Live as well? So
So that's in the middle of, or the end of June.
I've got that in my diary, and I'm going to that. So I'm hoping you can get there too, Jerry.
Yeah, I'm going to that. I've got my ticket.
Cool. That's good. I've definitely got it in my diary. I don't know if we do this, me and my wife just send calendar invites to each other so that we know that if we've got kids things happening, just so we know we can look at calendars and see if it's happening. So I'll definitely be going to that.
So that's the 24th of June, 2017. at a Harrison near King's Cross in London. I think there's still tickets available at time of recording.
Yep, it says it is. You can get some. So thanks for emailing us, John. Nice guy. We're probably going to get one on the show at some point, because we did get one before. That could be our last episode. I don't think it ever got... It never got published.
Never got broadcast, yeah. I don't even know if it got recorded. So I was going to say just that... I said everything I needed to say.
Okay, cool. Okay, and there's one email from Stuart. I don't know if someone to read that at kind of thing he's emailed in. So I'm guessing he might have heard from us from Linux Voice podcast kind of thing. So
yeah, we were plugged by John the Nice Guy on the Linux Voice podcast. So any new listeners that came from there, welcome.
Yeah, we've got plenty of old ones you can go through.
Yeah. And we're trying to be a bit more regular now. Yeah. Schedule it kind of thing.
We've got 52 that you can go and listen to.
We might have to look at doing international podcasts at some point. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Andy.
I've got the other email up from Stuart, if you want me to read that out. I've got that up here. So he said, "Hi chaps, I've just found your podcast. Maybe you come from there, who knows. I started on episode 49, but I was yelling at my player when you were talking about crafting the router scripts. What you need is a macro processor. Have a look at PyExpander, though there are lots of others. The simpler way would be to put some unique string into the document, such as string, IP address string, and then do a global replace on these strings, sort of a manual macro processor." And then he's provided a link, which we'll have to put into the notes, pyexpander.soundforge.net/introduction.html. But otherwise, keep up the work on the podcast. And that's from Stuart. So thanks for ringing in. Thanks for writing in. No telephones on this show. So thanks for writing in. And I remember we were talking about that, obviously, on episode 49. So what did you think about that then?
Yeah, I looked into it a bit, but I'm actually not on that project at the moment. So it's been taken away from me because I'm obviously doing other things. But that's interesting. Cause it's definitely what I wanted to do, where you can do search and replace and kind of things. So I guess I'll have a look at that in the future kind of thing. But it looks like it's like where you can just do a search and replace, isn't it, Andy? Does that make sense kind of thing?
Sorry, you cut out.
Does that look correctly then?
I think I talked about taking the kind of output of the command and putting it in something else and then processing it and then putting it back into the giving that back to the changed config back to the router sort of thing. It looks good. So there was one last thing I wanted to talk about in this sort of events category. I went to a thing called Scale Summit last Friday, in fact. Not the Friday just gone, but last Friday. I wish I had a calendar up.
Is that like Scale in America or not?
Completely different. Just for anyone that's wondering, that was the 24th of March, 2017. So, it's an unconference, why I wanted to mention it, really. It's kind of like Odd Camp is an unconference. Sort of a group of people in a room talking about tech.
Cool. Yeah. Was it good then? Was it free to go to?
The reason I was I kind of stopped talking there was because your picture is locked up, so I didn't know if I'd been cut off. I think I've got a bit of dodgy Wi-Fi here. It was about a load of sysadmins getting together and talking about various things. kind of the theme of it was about how to scale things, you know, how to take things from like a small scale to a large scale. But a lot of it was the format was a bit different from our camp, where you kind of tend to have a presentation and then sort of questions after. This was more like people suggested a session at the beginning. There was like a big, there was a talk at the beginning, like a keynote, and then people suggested sessions. And then you basically went into a room and there wasn't really a presentation, but you were just talking amongst yourselves about things. So it's kind of a bit like group therapy, I thought, in that way. It's kind of a different format to org camp, but similar if you think about it, because you know you have the microphone going round and the org camp. It's just a different take on things, and a big group of people that were working in, you know, these big sort of DevOpsy ops projects. A lot of government people working in government in that kind of sysadmin way, DevOps way. And I think what was it? There was a company that everyone had worked for. I can't remember now, but it was like everyone had been through this company that was there. Maybe probably better not to name them, in fact, on the podcast.
Good. Yeah. Okay. I had an event this week, and it's about hyperconverged. Which is a really good technology. It's basically like where you've got your SAN storage and your compute all in one server. But I'll have a go about talk about that next time, because it's quite interesting and complicated at the same time, kind of thing. I think we're just about there. I think we'll wrap it up there, and we're back for a bit.
Yeah.
Not 3 months kind of thing.
Yeah.
For it not to do. So,
It
seems like a while, but it doesn't seem like 3 months.
It's got to be 3 months, because I guess it's a whole of January, whole of February, yeah, and whole of March, and we haven't done anything since Christmas, I don't think, have we? So,
oh my god,
I think we've done one. I don't think we're that bad.
I don't know. I don't know when we last.
They may have come out. They may have been released in January or February.
I don't know.
Whatever.
We released one on the 16th of February, but I think we had February 16th, but I think we might have recorded that quite a bit of time. Anyway, so there we go. But photos on the social media sites or whatever, email us at mail@appandappenpodcast.co.uk, and we'll speak to you all soon.
Yeah, see you next time.
Okay, bye.